a neurotic prediction. She's a killer queen, gunfight eternity, dynamite with a laser beam, guaranteed to blow your mind.
Welcome to Arya's Prayer, a Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by NerdRotic.com. I am Gary Beekler in San Francisco, California, and obviously we are not with John Reed, who is in London right now doing things I can't talk about because spoilers. So I have a guest host, a lady I've known for over 30 years, is my best friend, who also happens to be my wife, Melissa Wagner. Hi.
Hi.
I totally dragged her into this.
You did. You kind of called me out.
She got me into the show, believe it or not. This was something I had, honestly, even owning a comic shop for 10 years, I had never heard of because it was in, those little books with words.
Oh, right. The novelizations.
Yeah, yes. Those are something I didn't have time to read owning a comic shop for 10 years. And she got me into it, and I dived into it a lot.
Right, a lot, yes. Yeah. I used to be a football widow. Now I'm a Game of Thrones widow, so I figure if you can't beat them, got to join them.
There you go. So let's get going. This was, a big setup episode. I think that was what we both talked about last night.
Well, the last episode had so much action, and we have so many characters that need to move forward and go in their new direction that this was obviously just sort of pointing everyone in that new way.
We needed a time to breathe after the whole Hodor thing. I am a little disappointed that there was no mention of him at all. Now, that's probably because Bran is still running. I mean, they're still in danger and they don't have time to collectively grasp the levity of the situation, the extreme weight and guilt that Bran has to feel about that. So I hope they kind of swing back and just go, damn, poor Hodor. I mean, that's all I need is a poor Hodor. Even though it's hard to say for me, anyway.
Well, yeah, they don't really have time to be sad and reflect too much. They're still running for their lives, literally.
Yes, and that's where this episode, starts out running, and we get some amazing flashbacks, and we're north of the wall. Mira's still the sled dog for Bran. He's still getting his upload from the Three-Eyed Raven who has passed, and they're dead meat. So he's getting these flashbacks and everything uploaded probably at the worst time possible, but we get to see some really cool stuff. We get a lot of flashbacks of the White Walkers and everything like that. We get to see the shadow of Drogon over King's Landing, which we've seen before, but then we get to see the Mad King, which was a total surprise. And this season, as I've talked about with John in previous podcasts, is fan service, and they really are paying off a lot of stuff. Now, did you know about the Mad King stuff? Is that stuff?
Just from what you've told me about it, and again, it's very advantageous to be watching the episode with somebody who can point out all of those things. It sort of reminds me of, sometimes when we watch movies and I can point out things that you wouldn't necessarily get that are pop culture references, but since you know the books so well, it kind of reminds me of when we used to watch True Blood because I read all the books. And you were just watching the shows, so, I would have to fill in certain things and certain background schemes. So what I know about the Mad King is just what you've referenced and who killed him and why and that he had it coming.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I was like questioning you madly over True Blood, which a series that completely slapped us at the face at the end and we shouldn't even be talking about it. Bad HBO. That is a very bad HBO. So lo and behold,
but when it was good, it was so good.
It was, but that last season was just crap. Come on, let's be real. The last two were really bad. So looks like they're dead. Bran is getting uploaded at the worst time possible. Mira, it looked like to me Mira was going to do what she did to her brother. I saw her pull a knife, and I thought it even looked like she was going to stab Bran, and maybe that's what they wanted you to think. And lo and behold, a giant horse and
which
a man in a cloak.
Which would have been a service.
It would have, and I think that's what she was going to do. It was just hard because some of these scenes are shot so dark. And there's Cold Hands. If you're not a reader of the books, Cold Hands is a character who actually helped Sam and Gilly come back from the wall from Craster's Keep when they escaped Craster's Keep. So what they do in the, they're doing a great job of combining. And what they did was they combined two characters who are, George R. R. Martin has made it clear that Cold Hands was not Benjen Stark, although everybody who read the books thought so. Well, the show went ahead and did it, which was totally cool. And I don't know.
It makes sense.
It totally makes sense in the show, in the aspect of the show. And that's why it's really important that you watch, you know, the previously on Game of Thrones. And it's important to watch if you have HBO afterwards. They do an explainer of the show. I wish they did this every season. And they have the writers talking, you know, breaking everything down for even people, you know, even book readers now get confused a lot about what's going on because a lot of stuff is getting spoiled.
Well, how
for
many
us.
Characters are in the show? How many characters are in the book?
Well, there's,
you said a number to me once, and it's a lot of people to keep track of.
5,000 characters in the book, which is as large as the entire Marvel universe, by the way. So, I don't know the number on the show. I will put it in print under this. I will figure it out. But it's a lot to keep track of. And there was a lot of callbacks this episode. So, for being kind of a nothing episode, it really was great for setting up the pieces. Seeing Benjen come back, though, is one of my, you know, favorite characters. You know, he was only in 3 episodes, but he was so badass when he was in those 3 episodes. And his fate is kind of sad and tragic. He's zombie Benjen. He's Benjen Coldhands.
He's magical now, though.
Yeah, but I saw some other podcasts talking about, oh, I can't wait for him to go across the wall. And I don't think Benjen can go across the wall. Because remember, if you read the books, Coldhands cannot pass the wall because the wall is magical.
And Benjen.
Like Benjen. And part of the magic was probably similar to how they kept the walkers and the whites out of the cave. I'm sure that's going to be part of the wall magic. And I know that Mark is going to come back into play. And John and I talked about it last podcast that I don't know if Bran can pass through the wall. I don't know if that's a great idea. Because if he's marked and the Night King is tracking him, can't he track him right through the wall? I hope it's not that simple. Because I guess the question out there is why wouldn't the Night King just grab any random guy and just mark him and wait for him to cross the wall? And we have had whites cross through the wall and attack in season 1 when they attacked Lord Commander Mormont and Jon Snow. They passed the wall, so I don't know, can whites pass it but not White Walkers? A lot of questions here. So Bran coming across the wall, I don't know, it's highly questionable where we go from here. And, you know, with Mira there, if he does go across the wall, I hope he goes to Greywater Watch to meet Mira's dad, who was really pivotal in the story. Mira's dad is the one who stabbed Arthur Dayne in the back of the neck in the flashback at the Tower of Joy, which tells me we are going to see him this season. I have pretty much no doubt. So then we go to, let's go to Horn Hill, where we have a really awkward meet the parents and one of the most British scenes in Game of Thrones history, where it's a bunch of English people sitting having an awkward dinner. And James Faulkner playing Randall Tarley, the guy just freaking nailed it. Who's Randall Tarley? He's kind of a bigger dick Tywin Lannister, but a little more honorable. Like, Randall Tarley wouldn't pull off a red wedding. He would kill you more honorably. He would just attack the castle and slay you all. He still would kill you all, but he would do it a little more honorably. But he's still bad, and I hope there is so much more of him. So we get to meet the parents, and what did you think of that scene?
The awkward dinner scene?
Mm-hmm.
I was a little disappointed that Sam wouldn't say anything at dinner, but I guess that he had to keep quiet because he had the bigger plan, and sometimes, you know, when you're the quiet one, you're really thinking in your head what you're going to do. So I think he really deserved to have his sword snatched, but I don't know. That character seems like the kind of guy that would go after his family heirloom that's been in the family for generations, but Sam needs it more. But also, he's supposed to be this Meister. What's he going to do now that he has his girl and child in tow? But it was a really cute baby, by the way. Very expressive.
That was a pretty cute baby. And very smiley.
Very smiley.
I don't know what they're going to do because that was really unexpected. I kind of thought it was going to be Sam. I fell for that one completely. I thought it was going to be Sam leaving her there and this is Gilly out of the picture, where she is so much safer than where she was before. I mean, it's a better situation. And she was the strong one, obviously, because she's like, whatever, work in the kitchens, that's better than being Craster's wife.
Right.
Yeah, this is awesome, and my kid's going to be safe, and it's going to learn to read. And Sam kind of screwed that up, but he's also looking at the big picture. Yeah, I understand why he was quiet. He did say he was quiet because he was worried he would pitch Gilly out, and that's totally legit. But as a guy who has a healthy fear of his dad when he was alive, anything that can make me just, it was my dad. And I know that feeling.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of glad the wife is the one who said something and excused them from the table. And she's like, you know what, this is unacceptable and my dinner is over. And, you know, I'm going to take this girl away from this abusive situation. At least she sort of stepped in and did something, which makes me really happy that she's not the cowering kind. Because, I mean, he's a very formidable character. So I would imagine that she's had to put up with years and years of this. So at least she has some boundaries there,
right? Yeah, and you could tell Randall loves his wife. Like he
didn't go after her. He didn't say anything. You know, he let her get up and leave. It's like, you know what? At least she's leaving. You know, leaving me to my dinner in peace, since eating with a wildling is so, you know, awful.
But he did take in the, you killed a White Walker. He didn't say, no, you didn't. He said, where did you kill a White Walker? You know, and mm-hmm. that's where my dad would have gone. My dad, forget the ridiculousness of the situation. Where did you fuck up? Let's find out exactly where that was so we can talk about it. You know, sorry. I had a lot of stuff come back on that one episode, obviously.
A lot of awkward family I love you, Dad,
with Father's Day coming up. But yeah, lots of awkward family dinners. Yeah, some of them are my fault, you know. Never drop acid and eat spaghetti.
Can I edit that out?
Maybe not. Oh, my God. So Sam steals Heartsbane, the Valyrian steel sword, which was, you know, good thinking if you want to just sell it because you could buy a castle with it. But he's gone. Now, what is he going to do? He can't go be a maester now. So, again, this is where a book reader's lost. Are they going to tie his story? Is he going to swing back to Jon? Is he going to head maybe towards Daenerys? I think those are two very open possibilities.
Oh, well, I would think he would go back towards wherever Jon's going. Because that's worked well for him so far.
It has. And I wonder if he knows. Well, obviously, he doesn't know anything of what's going on up there. But I think a lot of that is about to be found out. Let's go next to King's Landing, where I'd say the biggest stuff happened. And this story finally got a move on because I was really getting sick of it. And I know you were sick of the High Sparrow. But the High Sparrow, like, beat them all. Or did he?
I would hope not. I don't want him to win.
Well, do you think... Okay,
I hate a religious zealot. I hate it.
So in this scene, Tommen is empty shell that you can fill in whatever you want. And, you know, don't hate Tommen. He's a little boy. He was never expecting to be king. He's just sweet little Tommen with his cat in the book, Sir Pounce, which everybody loves. And I am definitely going to start a Reddit thread of fuck Sir Pounce because I don't really like cats, and I don't like fictional cats that people want to hang on to all the time and make cute little memes about. It really screws up my good Game of Thrones, you know, enjoyment on Reddit when I see cute little Sir Pounce things. It just makes me crazy. I hate Sir Pounce. It's more than I hate Ollie. Okay, sorry. Aside, there's see, she wow. gets that look in her face all the time. I really hate that fictional cat. So we go to King's Landing. Tommen's talking to the Sparrow. The Sparrow is filling him with truth in a lying kind of way, which after this scene, and we will explain it more, I am convinced now that I kind of thought the Sparrow was what he was. Like, he was just a good guy. I mean, a religious zealot, but he did have the poor. Like, his end game was helping the poor. But I think his end game now is bringing down the rich. I think that is more what he's about than actually helping the poor. Maybe when he had his little moment, he talked about Marjorie where he partied too much. Maybe he was filled with hate for them and resentment, not with, oh, F this. It could be F this too. I mean, we've all been to parties.
Just denounced it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And denounced it. But maybe he's, well, maybe, not. There's no maybe. He's harboring a resentment. And in that smirk he gave Jaime, what went down was kind of a triple screw over, and I think Marjorie might have been the one that won that one.
I think Marjorie is a girl with a plan for sure. She had all that time to sit in that cell, and she was just thinking of all the possible outcomes and how she was going to play them. All he did was give her time to really put together some strategies that would work for her. And, you know, there's a part of me, and I didn't read the books, but I'm really hoping that, you know, Tommen is even in on some of it. I think, you know what, I would like to think that she isn't just manipulating him, but, you know, being like, like, this is how we're going to do this. And, you know, Tommen's not an idiot. I mean, this is Cersei's son. He's seen strategies. He's seen them go the right way. He's seen them go the wrong way. And sometimes when you're trying to do the right thing for as many people as possible, you know, that's a plan worth following. So I think that they genuinely do care for each other, even though they're kind of icky together, you know, because it's just, it's weird. Like so many of the relationships, it's just weird. But I would like to think that they at least have some camaraderie and some mutual adoration there, you know, and that's going to make it work.
Definitely think they do. And I think Marjorie thinks she is helping Tommen, but she thinks he's dumb as a bag of hammers.
Does she?
Or a bag of anvils or whatever. I think she just thinks he's sweet and naive. Marjorie has turned out to be one of the best players of the Game of Thrones, can think on her feet faster than anybody in this show. She's a survivor. And you would talk about what? Survivor? She's always been rich. But maintaining your power in such a cutthroat world.
Oh, it's tough to stay on top.
With a good reputation.
Once you're up there, it's almost twice as much work to stay there as get there.
Yeah, and she's had help from her mom, from her grandma, from the Queen of Thorns. But Marjorie took over on this one. And I love the look on her face when she was about to do her walk of shame and they marched the army in, which was a cool scene, even after Mace's kind of silly little speech and his awesome feather bow. That was so rad. And Jaime looking pretty badass and riding a horse upstairs, which, you know, I think that might have been CG'd or something, but I can't think that's easy.
That hat and the feather stuff, I thought all of a sudden we were watching, like, Life of Brian.
Yeah, totally. It almost
it
felt
comical.
We were getting towards Monty Python a little bit there. But the look on her face, she was happy. She was she did that little Marjorie smirk when she saw the army come in, and and I think she wanted to show even to the other manipulators of her family, like, now I'm in charge. And I think this is totally Marjorie's way of subverting Cersei. I think this is all about subverting Cersei.
Well, Cersei deserves it.
Cersei caused all this, but you need to be careful because, you know, Cersei brought down a king, you know, and a hand who were loved and now made the one of the most loved man in the North look like, and he still is in the North, but in the rest of, you know, the Seven Kingdoms look like an idiot. Look at the play.
Mm-hmm.
So and the scene between her and Jaime, and which really felt like to me, especially when she said at the end, oh, we'll always be together. You know, that's just death in Game of Thrones. When we say we'll always, or don't knock the wall down, or what are you going to do, murder us all? You're just inviting some shit in this show. That felt like their last scene together.
Oh, God, I hope so.
And
that's icky.
It's super just different from the books. In the books, they are estranged at this point because Jaime found out that she slept with Lancel. And in the book, she sleeps with a bunch of Kingsguard men and possibly a court jester. We're not sure.
Cleopatra.
Yeah. So he's totally pissed at her and doesn't want anything to do with her. And I think that he'll eventually find that out. But they stripped Jaime of being a Kingsguard, which, again, is a huge change from the books, because in the books, he is obsessed with not regaining his honor, but being honorable from here on out. Like, I am not the Kingslayer anymore. I want to do things right. I'm still a Lannister, and I'm still going to fight for our house, but we're going to do things honorably from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm hoping it's a blessing in disguise for that character, because I really like Jaime. I do.
Have you forgiven Jaime?
For what?
Pushing Bran out of a tower?
Oh, yeah. That was so long ago. It is easy to forget that, though.
They're the villains.
They were the villains. But again, this is like, Jaime's not good when he's with Cersei. Look at when he was out and on the road and lost his hand and he's been humbled and a lot of things have gone on with it, that character. I think his character's really changed. And now I think that he recognizes that he's not good when he's with Cersei. And it's, you know, and it's not that she manipulates him. It's just they just do not bring out the best in each other. And they get this, like, pack mentality that is detrimental to anybody that is around them. You know, it's either you're with us or you're against us. And you'll just, like, fall in line and listen. And I think that, you know, he's been with her his whole life, you know, their brother and sister, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, so they've always been together. So I think that stint of him being on his own and, you know, being imprisoned, like, you know, again, a blessing in disguise. It was awful. It was an awful experience, but that's what sort of brought that character's hopefully truer qualities to the surface. And you got to see that, you know, he has another side, or he developed another side.
I think it's always been there, but it was developed totally right. Spot on. Well done about the toxic relationship thing. Have I grown to like Jamie? Yes. Have I forgiven him? I'll forgive him when Bran forgives him. But I think Bran would forgive him at this point, especially with the visions he saw, and eventually is going to happen, I think, if they survive. If Jamie survives, and at the end I will give you my predictions, and he's in danger. But again, with those flashbacks, we saw the Mad King, we saw the slaying of the Mad King, and we did get a shot of Jaime sitting on a throne, which was cool. But we, again, saw why he did it. He did it to save the realm. He actually did, I mean, he did a, you know, it was self-serving in a way, but he did save a lot of people.
We call that a win-win.
We call it a win-win. The Mad King, he
good
might...
Good for me, good for lots of other people.
Yeah, he was going to set, what was the Mad King going to do? He had a bunch of wildfire underneath King's Landing, and he was going to set the whole place on fire. That's why he was all, burn them all, burn them all. Now, the question is, why was he just repeating that? Because in the books and in the show, he is asked, what were the last words from the Mad King when you were killing him? And he just kept repeating, burn them all, over and over again. Kind of like Hodor. Was there something behind that? We will talk about that in my predictions. So King's Landing, I thought that was really cool. The Sparrow smirk, I thought, was the most telling thing. I think he is actually an evil character now, not just more than a zealot. I think he's out for destruction. In Game of Thrones, just when you think, I got this, something happens. Something happens.
I never feel like I got this.
No.
Because they kill off people that you think are major players, and that one always throws me for a loop. But I guess when you have so many characters, that you can afford to keep losing major players over and over and over and still have that story go forward. But that always sort of ends any sort of train of thought I might have going. It's derailed constantly.
Oh yeah, we're kind of numb to it now, so when justice does happen, we're like, wait, something's going to kill you now, right? Like, right, some lightning's going to strike or something, which, you know, this season's been pretty cool in the aspect where it's like, definitely this episode, you feel like the good guys, like, well, the good guys, as good as they get in Game of Thrones, are kind of rallying right now. And that was the theme of this episode, was all about rallying. We're circling the wagons. That's what's going on right now. So the next one, let's go down to the twins, where this is one of our big callbacks, and this is what we've all been waiting for. We've been waiting for a little bit of wedding, Waskowy Wabbits, revenge.
You're going back to the Monty Python.
and love each other, and that's actually Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Red Wedding Revenge. Say that 10 times fast.
Red Wedding Revenge.
You said it once. I can make you say it. With clever editing, I can do it, but I won't. We see Walder Frey come back with a 10-year-old wife. Slapping
11,
her on the ass.
12, what maybe.
I hope that was like a CG ass, or there was like a... Like, that had to be breaking some laws right there. That was really gross. And, but being Walder Frey, I mean, being Walder Frey in the books, and just, you know, I don't know why his sons just don't rise up and kill him. I really, he's the biggest a-hole, but he's so funny. He's really kind of funny. And he wants River Run back, because apparently he lost it to the Blackfish, who went out to, during the Red Wedding. If you don't remember, the Blackfish had to pee. And got up and...
Oh, right,
yeah.
Right.
And we haven't heard from him since.
I thought you were kidding there for a minute. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that really happened.
Well, he actually went out to pee, and then he found Gendry on the boat, and they rode around for a little while, and then he came back. So he went out to pee. He disappeared. They did mention it at the end of the season that the Blackfish escaped, and they did show you that in the scenes before. So he has retaken River Run, and they, of course, mentioned it in the previous episodes with Littlefinger. And this sets up a big kind of... they're looping back around to catch a Jamie story from the books, a huge Jamie story that they completely passed when they remember when we went to Dorne.
Oh, good, last I like season? A big Jamie story.
Yeah, it's remember when he went to Dorne? I'm trying to forget it. that was why. But this is great that they're going to go back here, and they brought back Edmure Tully, who you should recognize because he's in one of your favorite shows, which is that girly one based on the Doctor Who. Outlander.
There's some kilts.
There's some kilts.
There's some kilts.
Lack of things being under them.
Ginger snap involved.
Well, Outlander, which we actually is a show I greatly respect, but not really watch. And Ronald D. Moore, we love you. So he comes back, and that was his big callback, was to look really shabby and be in handcuffs and not say anything. But he did it really well. You know, that was really well played. So, and, but it was a really cool scene. And like, talk about circling back, and we're setting up what I think is going to be Red Wedding Revenge. Now, who is going to take that revenge, though? That's the big question. We've got a lot of characters converging on. Brienne's on her way down there with Podrick. Jamie's obviously going to take his buddy Bronn. Which, who, I mean, I love Bronn, but he was so much better with Tyrion. I mean, he was, like, just so much better with Tyrion. He's okay with Jamie, but I miss Bronn and Tyrion. I really do. So I hope Bronn survives to get back together with Tyrion at some point. We also, we got the Freys going down there. We got the Blackfish, and we have, you know, Brian's going down there with a message that, hey, we need you to leave that castle you just took and help me. You know, I don't know how he's going to play. I mean, they're asking a lot of the Blackfish right now, you know, for an old guy, for an old gay guy, you know. Not that that matters, but that's why he's the Blackfish, because he refused to get married. And he's honorable because, I mean, the theory is that he just likes men. And he doesn't want to, like, pretend to get married and all that BS. So that's why you become black. Like one of Walder Frey's sons refused to get married because he likes to have horrible sex with hookers and stuff. And he's called Black Walder. He's the one who opened up Catelyn Stark's neck. So that's why they call you black and then your name. Because you refuse to get married. You're a lordling. Who's?
The Blackfish.
The progeny?
Yeah. I mean, how is your line supposed to go on?
Oh, he doesn't care. He's an honest character. Like, he's like, I'm not going to live a lie.
Right.
And there's other kids. He had a son. He's like, I don't need to get married. You got Edmure, but this is why you have as, to be a lord, this is why you have as many kids as possible. This is where Walder Frey kind of wins, because he's got like 100 kids. And the Blackfish didn't get married, and now Edmure's captured, and he's the prisoner of the Lannisters. So this is not going to go well. We saw in the scenes that Black Walder has a knife to the neck to Edmure, and it's Black Walder. So I can't wait for next episode. But again, this was a huge setup, and I'm more interested. I mean, as good as this episode, I'm not going to say it's great. It was good. It was kind of short. It was good.
It felt short.
It felt really short, and it was one of the shortest episodes of the season, 51 minutes. It did set everything up nice, but now it's like this long week. It's like, I almost understand why people binge watch this show. It's really tough to watch it.
Well, and it's less confusing when you have that many characters. I mean, I've had some of my clients been like, there's so many characters, and it actually took me a while to get into the groove of like shifting back and forth between the groups episode by episode, and they've been like, you know, and my husband won't take the time to stop and explain it to me. And I said, well, come over to my house. My husband won't stop talking about it.
Okay, husband, take the time to explain stuff to your wife. I mean, it's not like you don't have a pause button. It's not like you can't watch it again.
Do you not want to get laid? It's a lot to take in.
Really? Come on. You know what? A lot of
I just, you know don't. What? I can't hang with these Frey scenes. Like, I get so distracted by the fact that he's smacking an 11-year-old girl on the butt that I actually can't remember anything he said.
It's kind of like when Lysa's like breastfeeding the 10-year-old boy. You're like, I can't hear anything else. I see can't. This guy who could shave breastfeeding.
I do have a hard time like following any dialogue after that, because I'm just like, they did not just do that.
Well, they okay, in that dialogue, if you didn't follow it, Walder, they talked about the Blackfish taking Riverrun again, the Brotherhood Without Banners, if you remember, that was Beric Dargdarian, who kidnapped Arya, and then she got away, and one of my favorite characters, Thoros Amir, who is a drinking red priest, he's the one who brought back Beric Dondarrion. They're rising up the common people and raiding their supply trains, and there's, two other houses, Malister, Jason Malister, and Blackmont rose up, which are two pretty big houses. Malister is a huge house under Riverrun, so it's kind of like Umbers would be the Stark if the Umbers didn't betray the Starks. Be assholes. So that's a big problem. I don't think this is going to be easy for, you know, Jaime's like talking about going down there as a siege that could last for a week. Jaime is in grave danger. There is a lot of people converging, but we are going to get a Brienne and Jaime reunion. And I think it will be next episode. So that's something to look forward to.
So we're going to have the Jaime, Brienne, Tormund triangle. I'm wondering how that alpha male business is going to go down.
Jaime Tormund? What's that one going to be called?
Because, you know, Brienne, who's just been, like, confused about those attentions that he's been getting from Tormund, is going to see Jaime. She's going to get big cartoon hearts in her eyeballs. He's not going to like that.
No, I don't think so. And she's also on the other side. Let's not think about it. Even though he tasked her to go get Sansa, it seems that Jaime's now all about family. Well, she's going down to treat with the Blackfish, who Jaime's going down to kill. Mm-hmm. So, and what they don't mention in the show, and they mention in the books, is the Blackfish is one of Jaime's heroes as a kid. Like, that he just totally idolized the Blackfish. Because he was a badass. So, I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. For real quick, let's go to Vaes Dothrak. I just like saying Vaes Dothrak.
You know who does it. Yeah. Just rolls off the tongue.
And it's just, hey, it's a bunch of guys. It's kind of like the motorcycle gang of Game of Thrones, the Dothraki, following Dany, and she, you know, runs ahead, comes back flying on her dragon. And the most impressive thing about this scene was the dragon's effing huge. Like, he
has grown.
He was off growing somewhere, eating.
Eating a lot of goats.
Oh, and what happened to that white horse she rode on? Did she feed it to him really quick? Because I didn't see it again. She rode off on a white horse, came back on a dragon. So I'm thinking,
I doubt she fed silver to her dragon. Well, I mean, that was a wedding present.
It was a good speech, but it was repeated word for word. What? And I understand why they did this, but I wish they would have given her her own speech. Maybe calling back to Khal Drogo's speech, but she said it word for word. And it was cool. It was a cool scene. I don't think it was as rally as I wanted it to be. It wasn't, you know, like King Theoden's speech in Return of the King, which had me jumping out of my chair and wanting to fight, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I have to say my problem with the speech wasn't that it harkened back to my Moon and Stars mm-hmm. speech. My problem is, like, after watching Star Trek for so long, and
she did.
You know what? Klingon sounds like freaking Klingon. When she's trying to speak Dothraki or anything else, it just sounds like mumbo jumbo to me. It doesn't sound like they have any sort of linguistics actually going along.
It's
a
language. I just don't think it's fleshed out.
It's not fleshed out. It doesn't sound fleshed out. Things aren't repeated. I mean, I'd like to go back and really like compare some words and things, but it doesn't ever sound like anything. And you know, after watching Klingon, it's like come to life. I mean, it's like it actually felt like a very well thought out imaginary language, and it had, you know, a lot to it, where this just, it doesn't feel right.
It's not fair to compare it to Klingon, because Klingon had years and a bunch of fans with time on their hands to make it. Now, J.R.R. Tolkien created his, I mean, that's pretty much why he did Lord of the Rings, was to create his own language. That's what he did. That was his thing. And, like, Elvish sounds freaking real and brilliant.
So it's not fair.
But when Khal Drogo was speaking Dothraki, I thought it was cool. Mm-hmm. I think with certain people, like when Jorah speaks it, it sounds like an Andal speaking Dothraki. It does have, I mean, it is a fleshed out language. It's just not by George R. R. Martin. This is purely a show thing. I mean, there's no
doctor. Well, I don't think that, you know, the creator of Star Trek made up a Klingon language. Again, that's something where you have somebody who comes in and does that. Somebody who has some sort of linguistic something, base it on something, and, you know, and work with her so that if she's going to give a powerful speech, it doesn't sound like she's just talking with marbles in her mouth.
Yep.
So it was distracting for me. It didn't feel good for me.
Yeah, it kind of
felt dragon flat. Looked amazing.
I loved that you could see the little, what would you call them, glands?
That where
the fire comes out. I thought that was really...
I thought the wings looked really good.
The dragon looked great. Good job, guys, you know, especially doing that in daylight. And she's done better speeches. Dany delivers the big moments of the show more than anybody. And this just wasn't one of her best. But believe me, she's got a lot more rallying speeches to do. There's like five more armies to rally. But she'll do it in like the common tongue. I like common tongue. Common tongue. Sorry. We all like the common tongue, don't we? Okay. Let's really quickly go to the podcast namesake, our adorable little Aria, who is no one, but is she? So we go back to Braavos, and another thing Melissa was not loving was a girl is sweeping the floor and a girl is beating another girl up with a stick.
A girl has no name, a girl is no one, and he's a faceless man, and we're going nowhere. I'm like, it's enough of this. Arya was the best character. Like I said, I could go through the books just reading Arya's story, and it would have been the most interesting part to me. You know, she's just so tenacious, you know, and she just has such a great sense of what's right and who's wrong, and I'm going to dole out some punishments. It's sort of like, you just wait till I get big, because I'm going to clean some house, and I'm going to take care of everything I can on my way through that journey.
Agreed. And they, I mean, the book drags in this part too, but they left a couple things out that would have been rad. Like the first time she meets Jaqen. Mm-hmm. He's actually got a skull. He tries to scare her. It's like a trick he does, and it's a skull with a worm coming out the eye when he first meets her, and she takes the worm and eats
it. Like Pest Head?
Yeah, and she takes the worm and eats it. And he's like, oh, nobody's ever eaten my worm before. I like you. You know, and then she also is a warg, which they've completely cut out of the show, which would have been rad. So while she's sleeping, she wargs into Nymeria, her direwolf that's still in Westeros, who's gone around and collected this super pack of wolves. It's like 100 wolves, and they've been running around the Riverlands just eating people and goats and Freys and Lannisters. And so she wargs at night and gets her revenge. So they've left all that out. Cool. It was rad. That's why you should read the books. But thankfully, the scene is over. But I've really liked the acting troupe. I think I want more of them. I think they have been great in their little scenes, and it's great to like show you, you know, it's how Arya gets caught up. I don't know how much of this story she really knows. And when she gets caught by Lady Crane, and she's all, well, that ending speech was crap. And she said, well, change it, you know, cause you know, Cersei would have been mad. Mm-hmm. And when she's saying, I didn't catch this until the second
she's
viewing.
Angry.
When she was saying it to her, she was saying it to herself. She's all, she wouldn't cry. She'd be angry. She'd want to kill the ones who did this to her. And that was when she realized, I need to go back. Mm-hmm. I'm not a faceless man. I'm Arya Stark. And I need to go back and kill some people. I wasn't done yet. And I think that was the moment.
And she had that anger. I mean, she said her prayers every night and went down the list. And you know what? Her anger was a great fuel, and it kept her going, and it kept her, you know, on task. And that's why this whole faceless this, faceless that, it's like, it was almost like, okay, well, this is going to help me become that great warrior. What it was almost like, you know, almost a Little Mermaid story, where it's like, how much of yourself are you going to really give up to have this gain? And so when she comes back and she spills the poison, you know, upon, you know, her reflection, because, you know, she that has the mirror and she sees herself doing this. And it's like, you know what? I'm not going to follow anybody blindly. And nobody who with a brain in their head would do that.
No, especially Arya, who's got a huge brain in her head. But, you know, season 5 and the beginning of this season was all, you know, Jon getting killed, Sansa getting raped, as our heroes just getting broken down, Dany getting recaptured and almost, you know, raped. But it was the third act, you know, we're now getting at the point where this is, like I said, we're rallying, and they've all come to their senses, and they're all going to converge and, you know, enjoy this. This is the last full season of Game of Thrones. So basically, we got one more season that they're going to split in half. So this is the last 10 episodes we're going to get. So enjoy it. And I've actually been really enjoying the season. This has been a great season. Especially, I was really worried it was going off book. But it really hasn't gone off book. I was a little over worried about that. They've really kept to the book. Yes, there's been some major changes, but they're still within the theme of the book.
I love what John said last week about the plays being their media. you know, that's what they had to, you know, do their storytelling and share the stories with the public. And, you know, that's something that I would have never broken down that way, and how it just has this like very surface sort of facade, you know, paper doll kind of character that you see, which we know from the depth of the story isn't really the truth, but it's like this sort of just surface that is portrayed to people, you know, a parody.
Kind of like our news now.
Kind of, you know, and I didn't really think of it like that. And I thought that was a really good analogy.
That was a really good analogy. You know, it's like the news, you know, it's kind of like The Onion, but The Onion is closer to becoming the actual news, you know. And
right.
And yeah, that was really, really smart of our little friend John.
So Arya tapped back into her anger. And I think that it's going to give her exactly what she needs. In the rest of what's to come next week.
I am looking forward to hearing her prayer again, and hopefully there'll be a few more names on the list. It was getting a little short. Okay. So real quick, predictions for next week. I've got like 2 minutes to do this. I think there's a lot of spoilers. I read a lot of Reddit. A lot of the spoilers on Reddit were completely just, they were wrong. They were completely wrong. So nobody knows what's going to go on. Brain is going to go down to meet Jamie. I think it's going to end really badly. I think it's not going to be all love and stars. It will be at first, and then it's going to turn into, why are you here? You know?
So we're going to give about 2 seconds.
Yeah, but she's going to, you know, she is completing his mission. Remember, part of Jaime's oath to Catelyn Stark was, I'm going to get your kids back, because this was in trade. I'm going back. You will get your daughters back, and I will never take up arms against Starks or Tullys again. That was part of his oath. So, he's breaking more oaths. And I think that will bother Jamie. I think he'll still do it, but that's going to go into his
negotiations. Has he broken it yet?
Well, that goes in. I don't want to ruin things from the book. That goes into his negotiations. He's like, I got to end this fight without fighting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time. That's not Jamie. That's not what Jamie does. That's what Tyrion does. But, you know, this is where we see, you know, Tommen is Jamie's son. Mm-hmm. You know, he thinks before he goes into action before he thinks. You know, I can relate to that. This is, you know, this might be more time for Jamie to shine, but I think he's in grave danger because of that Red Wedding revenge I'm talking about. There's a lot of characters circling. It's totally being set up for Walder Frey to get massacred. I just wonder who's going to do it. Mm-hmm. I hope it's Arya.
Well, you know, going back to what you said earlier about Jamie, if he's being stripped of his being the Hand and, you know, deep down his character is all about honor, what's the best way for him to redeem himself from here? Well, it would be to honor the oath that he made.
Mm-hmm. You're right. At the end, yes. But that would be betraying Cersei.
I think that he's going to realize that he needs to do that.
I'm sticking to my prediction that Cersei sits the Iron Throne at the end of the season. I think she is on it. I think little boy Tommen will get... Something will happen to Tommen. I actually kind of think I know what's going to happen to Tommen. But remember that Tommen, I mean, now that we're all religious and everything, remember Tommen's a bastard from incest. So that cannot be good. And that truth is out there. So.
But that's not Tommen's fault.
It's not Tommen's fault, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. it doesn't, he's not king. Cersei actually has a better claim than he does because at least she was married to the king, although women can't scent the iron. Well, I don't know if they can't. They just haven't. But I think the big thing they have to set up is they have to set up that a woman can sit on the Iron Throne so Daenerys can come back. You know, because I...
She hasn't let anybody tell her what she can't do so far.
Yeah, and we got Sansa being set up, you know, because Jon can't take anything. He's a bastard. You know, so Sansa's the Stark name, and I think we're seeing her maybe being the Lord of the North, you know, or the Lady, Lord, whatever.
Well, she'd have to stop pouting long enough to do that.
So, did you have fun?
I did.
You did? You want to do this next week? Because Jon will still be gone.
Oh... Well, if he's in London, tell him he has to go to Buckinghamshire. He has to go to Buckinghamshire because he has to go to the Devil's Horseman, which is the stables there that's been... they train all the horses for Cersei. All the movies. And they're the ones who've done a lot of the stunt horses for Game of Thrones.
The Mountain.
Awesome.
Oh, and the Jack the Ripper walking
tour. And the Jack the Ripper walking tour. There's some good comic shops.
Cersei. Next week, though, we might have to delay because we will be...
Oh, it'll be delayed, but, you know, unlike John, we're dedicated. We're going to Las Vegas next weekend, but we're still doing the podcast. right?
Right.
Okay. Guys, take care. See you next week. Thanks for listening or watching.
Thanks.
A neurotic prediction.